Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
So, today we are talking about aging dilemmas and the realities for you in your 40s, 50s, and a whole lot older. And something we need to tackle because the pace of the population aging is much faster than in the past. In 2020, the number of people aged 60 years and older outnumbered younger children than 5 years. Between 2015 and 2050, the proportion of the world's population over 60 years will nearly double, from 12% to 22%. And that's because our medicine and health facilities, well, in most parts of the world, have got a whole lot better. So, you know, what is the trick here? Is it a mental thing? Is it a physical thing? I would love to hear from you. I mean, what is the trigger for you? Was there a stage when suddenly you felt old? Glenn Close says, Meryl Streep rather said that at the age of 40, she thought she wasn't going to get another job. So let's bring in our guest for the day, Dr. Babalwa Makhlwana. A very good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Jane. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your book and what you found about this, the after 40 dilemma. What is it?
So this is a really personal story because I write as not a doctor, but as a student of life based on what I observed in my own life. And to your question that you asked just now in terms of what triggered it for me, it really was the reproductive health aspect of things, where suddenly, because I'm over 40, the choices that I'd made earlier to have just one child and then just postpone the whole thing eventually then became a reality after 40, where suddenly it was not even up to me anymore in terms of just deciding to try it that again.
I mean, I can absolutely relate to that. When you get told that, you feel as though the world is crashing down, right? You feel mortal. You feel that suddenly, you know, your days are numbered, and yet they are not.
Exactly. And in the book, I call it my fierce race against my biological clock.
and how do you beat that clock?
Like. And exactly, and that is the question, is can we beat it? Certainly we have more options now, but it depends on where you are, because then if you're already in your 40s and you haven't taken the opportunity earlier on to either have more children or to get other options, whether it is, we talk a lot about freezing these days, but some of us didn't have those options or didn't entertain those options years and decades ago. And yet here we are. And especially in my case, where you've then prioritized this career and you've climbed this corporate ladder and you've shattered every possible ceiling, as I did. And then here you are. And suddenly there's something that is not up to you. Yeah. And this was not up to me.
No. I mean, it's exciting in a weird way, because you realize that your body's doing, I guess, what it should be doing. You know, it's going according to plan. And we might not like that plan. I think that's the only difference. Bianca, a message from Bianca, who says, we are living longer. We need to be extending the retirement age because people need to work to be healthy too, to help themselves, because dependency on others doesn't create happiness. That's a good point, isn't it? I mean, I feel that I need to work until the day that I can no longer do it. I think a lot of people feel that way.
I subscribe to exactly the same. I don't foresee that I will ever retire, at least not in the traditional sense, right? So I agree with that. And that's one of the points that I make, that the progressiveness of our society and even socially who we are as a species, there's a lot of freedoms that we did not necessarily enjoy in previous decades. And now here we are in this highly progressive society, and yet there are still things that are not catching up, and the biological clock is one of those things that no matter how evolved we are otherwise in every other area, therein remains the conundrum. And in this case, I speak about a topic that is seldom tackled, because we talk about infertility, that's a popular topic that's known, We talk about menopause, but there's the transition in between. And especially then when somebody like myself, you find that you still have aspirations in this area. And suddenly the challenge is when you are pre-menopausal, so not necessarily perimenopausal or menopausal, but just pre, that the quality of one's eggs, and we know this, and hence there's the reference to possibilities of children anomalies after the age of 35, because this speaks to firstly the number of eggs, but also the quality, in that then you've got less and less, chances of maintaining a pregnancy. And so we don't talk about what happens between 40 and the actual onset of menopause when one does actually fall pregnant. So I talk about my story, which then is a phenomenon known as recurrent pregnancy loss. And that really stems from how healthy a pregnancy one can sustain based on the quality of these eggs. And like I said, I don't think that this is a topic that we delve into or that we entertain or explore or talk about. There's that biological aspect, but then there's the whole psychological journey that comes with that.
And, I mean, obviously that is only something that women can experience. But men suffer from the effects of aging as well, don't they? I mean, it might not be obviously the egg route, but their body changes too. It's also a hard journey. I mean, the hair starts to fall out. That could happen a lot earlier. The cars get bigger. What are the differences?
And of course, there's the stress factors which apply to both genders. Correct? Is that And there's a lot that we hear about in terms of these dilemmas and this phenomena, such as whether it is a midlife crisis, which does also relate to both. So, there's a lot biologically, psychologically, socially as well.
Do you think that we address these issues from the top down, or, you know, from the outside in, rather than, I mean, I went to the gym this morning and I used to smoke a long time ago, and I've got these horrible lines on my top lip, can't stand them. And but I wouldn't do that, you know, when you pump up those lips and you sort of get those duck lips. Do you think people are covering their aging issues in the right way? Or, I mean, does it matter? If that works for you, then go for it.
I would suppose so, and I don't think I would be too prescriptive on this one, but I tend to agree with you in that we would address only the symptoms, right, in terms of looking at what you're seeing on the outside and addressing that. But the whole notion of self-care that I speak to is the totality of this, because it's the mental well-being, it's the psychological, social, but the spiritual as well, because the nurturing actually has to come from inside out. As I've already said, we live in a very stressful society. The point in history that we're at, with exposure to information that we have never had before in the history of humanity, I'm not sure that we've evolved in terms of the capacity to actually be able to absorb all of that, let alone actually empathize with what's happening in the world. In fact, I think we become desensitized. So it can't possibly be a miracle cure or a one pill that one can take to either reverse the or even halt the impact of aging. And I think ultimately it is about embracing the journey, because ultimately we're all headed that way. It's about the pace and most importantly about the quality of one's life.
And we've got to get our heads around it, because people are living longer. I mean, my aunt is 92. She's extraordinary. She still plays bridge and she has a whiskey at night. And, you know, she still walks, obviously not as fast as she once used to. But people are living a lot longer.
No, indeed, indeed. And therefore society and even the economy, to the contribution that we had earlier, we need to be looking at this differently.
How?
I couldn't agree more in terms of, so first of all, self-care and therefore enabling our bodies to live longer, because it's one thing to have your biological body living longer and yet the mental aspect of it is not nurtured. Mm. So that needs to catch up, and the psychological aspect also needs to catch up.
I like this quote by Meryl Streep, who said, "You have to embrace getting older. Life is precious. And when you've lost a lot of people, you realize that each day is a gift. You don't want to have to wait for that day, do you? You don't want to have to be reminded when you lose somebody close to you that it's a gift that we're alive."
This is really true. I often say that I got my liberation at the age of 40. In fact, I do agree that life begins at 40, because one of the things that the age of 40 did for me was to actually enable me to get over myself, like I like to say, which then...
Which is a big thing, by the way.
It's a big thing. It's a big thing. This actually freed me up to be without... without hang-ups, without a chip, without worrying about what anybody else really thinks. So whether it is my financial choices, you know, this whole, whether it's keeping up with whomsoever, right? And really appreciate and embrace your own agency in terms of then the choices that you make going forward. And again, taking into context that we are living longer. So 40 actually gave me an opportunity to reset.
Mm. If you look at, well, there are many communities that celebrate the social side of life, the Japanese being one of them. And there's a fantastic book called Ikigai. And I know it's a statement, a concept that combines, I mean, basically life and, you know, what life's worth and what its meaning is. They spend a lot of time with people their age and getting involved with each other's domestic problems or domestic life or planting, you know, vegetable gardens together. Is that something like that important for all of us? And it sounds really simple, but maybe it's not as easy as we think it is to achieve.
And maybe it's not. And it is maybe about the pace at which our society is evolving and who the primary influence is. So if you take historically that in the African sense, it's always taken a village to do not just raising a child, but really to do everything else, including sustaining ourselves.
Wow.
Whereas we then progressively became more individualistic. And maybe there's real value in relooking that. So from a policy framework or in even internationally, we talk about sustainability, which is not just us looking at our generation, but looking at the world that we'll be living behind for future generations. And maybe this is where this comes back to the fore, to say if we're looking at solutions collectively, sustainable solutions, not just for now, but for the long term, and solutions that are going to outlive us, then you're possibly correct in saying that the collective mentality becomes relevant again, if not more sustainable as a solution.
And adult learning, that's important. I was desperate to learn languages. I'm just not that good at it. And so I've decided to take a bridge instead. And I've been doing it for about the past 6 months. And I love it because it is so hard. It is so fascinating. But I really feel as though I'm giving my brain a good old workout. That's important, isn't it?
That is so important. And my personal experience was really, really humbling. Because when I went back to the classroom formally was literally 2 decades after my medical degree.
Mm.
But I'd taken a few management courses in between, because primarily I'm interested in management and I'm a leader in the medical research industry. But when I went back to the classroom, my mind took a beating. But not only that, but my whole philosophy about defining who is smart and what does smart actually mean, because I thought I was smart until I needed to unlearn most of the things that I already believed in so that I could learn and then relearn new things. So we talk about the concept of unlearning, learning and relearning, and it's critical for an adult learner because it requires a certain openness but a lot of humility as well.
And should you compare yourself to others? I should imagine when you went back to learning, you probably looked at these, some of these youngsters and thought, wow, I mean, how do they know that much at such a young age? I mean, should we compare ourselves to our peers, or should we not compare ourselves to anyone at all?
And in fact, the trick is to never, ever compare yourself. Only compare yourself to the best version of yourself. And that is your best competition.
Okay, so, you know, many people, when they get older, they feel overlooked. My mum calls it invisible when you walk down the street and suddenly you are invisible. Maybe nobody wants to listen to you. You're too old to go to clubs, too old to wear certain fashion activities, you know, make you feel old because you realize that, you can't get your head around it. How do you deal with stuff like that?
And it's true in that one does feel a certain less relevant because there'll always be advances in every stage, everywhere that you touch. What I've experienced in my journey, and this is what I teach to people who I mentor in terms of their careers, is that what is really great is to find a niche, because you do need to find an area where you excel at, or find something that you're an expert in. And keep working at that, because in that way you maintain that relevance.
Exactly.
And then you also need to remain open to keep growing at that.
Yes. That's an important point, isn't it? To remain open. I think that keeps you young. You know, you must listen and go, oh gosh, okay, I might not understand that, but I can appreciate it. Because if you start switching off your mind to new ideas, that's a quick way to age.
And this is the fundamental difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. Yeah. Because a growth mindset is about saying, I cannot possibly know everything that there is to know. Yeah. And I need to therefore remain open to learn about new things. And look at what interests you, and look at your own unique experiences, because somewhere within that lies what people commonly refer to as purpose, because there's a reason why you've got your unique gifts. There's a reason why you've got your unique experiences.
Mine's not so unique anymore because there are a lot of us out there, but I'm an older mum with some very young kids, so I'm going to be working until at least I'm about 102. But I mean, every experience is unique, isn't it? And you've got to work out your own conversation around it, you know? I might not be hanging around with the school kids' mums, you know, but I'll find another place to, you know, make my friends.
Exactly. You've got to own your story.
Yeah,
but then also own your influence, own your circle,
And I guess keeping, you know, mentally fit, that's a no-brainer. Physically fit, also a no-brainer. Do what you can do,
and spiritually fit as well. I have to emphasize this because there still needs to be something that grounds one. In my opinion, when all is said and done, if there's something that doesn't work out, I often say to my daughter, who I write about extensively as well, with her own mental health challenges, is that if you look at mental health as an example, is that you are a biopsycho-spiritual being, and therefore, yes, take the meds that they prescribe you. Yes, go to therapy, but nurture your spirit as well. Because if not, then you're going to be looking for things to numb the pain.
What do you want people to feel when they read your book and when they've concluded your book? How should they, other than walking away with a spring in their step, what should they take away with them?
I really hope that it's relatable. And that ultimately, because the way that the story is written, it's quite redemptive. And that there's hope in that whatever it is that one goes through, there's method somewhere in all of the mystery, because somehow everything just comes together. And it all does come together because it's meant to be part of this unique journey that we all have. And therefore embrace the journey. Embrace life.
And age gracefully, if you
can. And age gracefully. And if you were to meet me in person, beautifully as well.
Good for you. I love that. All right. If somebody wants to get hold of your book, where can they find it?
Okay, so we are still in the watch the space. We are at the final stages of the actual publication and publishing process, and certainly we'll be making a lot of noise across the social media spaces as soon as we are available for pre-ordering. But we would want this to go through a proper pre-ordering process so that readers are actually hungry for it when it does come.
And I'm sure they will be. And I hope you sell many books. Dr. Babs Mahlulwana, author of The After 40 Dilemma. Thank you.